Welcome to Vital Voices. Our guest today is World War II historian Dr. Stephen Fritz, professor of history at East Tennessee State University. Dr. Fritz has authored four books centered around the Second World War. The first was Frontsoldaten, the German soldier in World War II, published in 1995. That was followed by Endkampf, Soldiers, Civilians, and the Death of the Third Reich in 2004. 7 years later came Dr. Fritz's book Ostkrieg, Hitler's War of Extermination in the East. We ask him to explain what led to his most recent book, The First Soldier, Hitler as Military Leader, published by Yale University Press in 2018.
I had written the three previous books all on different aspects of World War II, so I had decided I was done with World War II. and my second book, I'd investigated the last few months of the war in this one area, Bavaria, I was very familiar with. And then the first couple post-war years, so I got really fascinated with that transition from war to peace and how difficult it was. In my mind, I kind of had an idea that, or a notion that, ending wars is not so easy as it seems. But after doing the research and writing at Endkampf, I was really struck by that. And even then, I had intended to go on and do some research on the post-war era, in the immediate post-war era, the first 5 or 6 years after the war in Germany. And at that time, I started doing the preliminary research, and then I was in discussions with at that time the editor at the University Press of Kentucky, and we got to talking, and off the top of my head, I just said, well, I guess I was teaching a class on World War II at the time, and I said, what would you think about a new book on World War II, which is aimed more at the general public, but kind of that would integrate World War II and the Holocaust, the Eastern Front, and give a kind of a new history of the Eastern Front, since in English the last one was about 30 years ago. So he thought that was a great idea, and he said, I'm going to the board here in 2 weeks, so send me a proposal and I'll take it to them. And of course, after I had time to think about it, I realized what a big project that would be, and I was already on this other thing, so I thought, well, I just won't do anything, and he'll forget about it. So about a week later, I get a phone call from him. Where's my proposal? I'm going to the board in a week. I need a proposal here. So I said, well, okay, I'll slap a proposal together, and that became Ostkrieg, my third book. So. Right. So the fast forward here, after Ostkrieg, I thought, okay, I'm going back to the post-war period. I'm not going to do World War II anymore. And so I started doing serious research on some aspects of the post-war situation in this area of Germany I was familiar with. And I get an email from the editor at Yale University Press in London, the trade books, and she said she had read Ostkrieg and thought it was a very good book in terms of bridging that scholarly kind of educated public sort of audience. And so, would I be interested in writing a book on Hitler as military leader? So I emailed her back and said, no, I'm not really interested in that. I said, no, I'm doing this other stuff. So I said, how about if I write about this? And I mentioned something else, and she wrote back and said, well, that's a good idea, except we already have somebody else working on that. Interestingly enough, I ended up reviewing the book that was written on this other topic. So then I emailed her back and suggested like 2 or 3 other possible topics. And she said, well, those are interesting topics, but why don't you reconsider, you know, doing something on Hitler's military leaders. And I emailed her back and said, okay, I'll take a couple months and look it over and do some preliminary research. And if I can do it the way I want to do it, then, you know, okay. So I started doing the preliminary research, and I began to see what she was getting at, that this was a subject that had not been dealt with. And there was so much more research since the last book came out on Hitler as a military leader, which again was about 30 years ago. And there was so much more understanding of his ideas and the origin of his ideas and so forth, that that's when I decided, okay, I can see how if I can take World War I and the impact of World War I and show how this develops his ideas and his notions of how to fight a war, then I can do it. So I got back to her, and she was happy with that. And so the idea for the first soldier was not mine at all.
What do you think planted that idea in her head?
I think she had, the woman's name is Heather McCallum, who is now actually the head of Yale University Trade Books in London. She was very, very good at discerning historical topics that the general public would be interested in, and then getting academic scholars to write these books. And just before she contacted me, she had commissioned, and then they had published a book on Stalin as kind of a military figure, military leader. So I suspect, and she never quite told me straight out, but I suspect that that's where the idea came from, that she had the book on Stalin, so it seemed to make a perfect complement to have a book on Hitler as military leader.
How much travel did the research for the Hitler book take?
Yeah, actually, this particular project I was fortunate, because I really didn't have to take any trips to Germany as such to go to archives, because they were all available in published records. And many cases, they were available digitally. The Library of Congress, of course, has all of the official records of the Nuremberg War Crimes Trial. Essentially, the Nuremberg War Crimes Trial, if nothing else, was a gigantic history lesson. So what the prosecutors wanted to do was gather all the evidence they could find documenting what the Nazis had done. And so, I mean, they're like 48 volumes, each volume running to like 800 to 1,000 pages of documents. The Library of Congress has digitalized all this, so it's all on the internet. So you can download each volume. And so I could just sit in my office here and download the volumes, and then literally you can just page through the volumes on the computer. It's really a different world than my first couple books, when you actually had to go to archives and do a lot of this laborious work. So much of it now regarding Hitler and the Nazis and Germany has been digitalized, that it's astonishing how many primary sources I can access just off the internet.
An astounding number of books have been written about Hitler and his era. Why another Hitler book?
Some of the earlier, I guess you'd say, assessments of Hitler as a military leader were done by themselves ex-generals, most of them British, and their assessments are always kind of dry, and I don't want to say dull, but kind of dry, sort of straightforward military accounts, like you were writing an after-action battle report or something. Well, here's what Hitler did wrong here, here, and here in military terms. Well, to me, that might have been, from their perspective, technically correct, but it didn't get it. What I was interested in was always the why. Why did Hitler choose to do this? Did he have reasons for his military decisions, and many of these key military decisions, maybe, you know, that resulted, that constituted turning points, where if he'd made a different decision, maybe something things would have turned out differently. I was just as much interested in why. How was he justifying this? How was he? What was he seeing, and what was the information he had at his disposal? And was he in fact making irrational, illogical decisions when he did this? So that's why I was interested in trying to get these records, so I could get an idea of what he was actually saying to his associates, and then I could get an idea of his reasoning, why he was doing what he was doing.
How did a World War I corporal eventually absorb enough knowledge to make these kinds of decisions?
Hitler had a very powerful mind. He was not formally educated beyond the age of 15. He dropped out of school when he was 15, but he had a very powerful mind, and he read a lot, and he had a photographic memory at minimum, and I don't remember the term, but he had one of those memories where he literally remembered everything he ever saw, basically everything he ever read, he remembered. so he could absorb things. His World War One experience was interesting because he was at the front line, but not quite. So he was close enough to the front line continuously to be in danger, but he was in fact a dispatch runner from regimental and then, you know, from battalion and then regimental headquarters for most of his time. He spent the first few months he spent in the front lines, and then he was then he became a dispatch runner. So he was exposed to the danger, but being a battalion and regimental dispatch runner meant that he was just behind the front. So he didn't have all the drudgery and work and kind of daily dull routine of men at the front. And he was around headquarters, and so he would have access. He could see the maps. He could get dispatches. He could overhear what was going on, what was being discussed. So he had kind of the luxury of knowledge and time, so he could think about these things. So that's part of it. And the other part of it is that Hitler was an avid reader of history, and he had absorbed a lot of knowledge from reading about Frederick the Great and other German military figures, Bismarck, other people, so Moltke, the Elder. So yeah, he had read a lot, and then his World War One experience was peculiar in the sense that, as I said, he was at the front, so he was exposed to the danger, but he had opportunity and time to kind of ponder decisions and the meaning of decisions and what might have been done differently and so forth.
How did the 1923 Munich beer hall putsch change the trajectory of his life?
He was, up until the beer hall putsch, he'd been an important regional figure in Bavaria, but he was barely known outside of Bavaria. But what happens is he's put on trial in February 1924, he's put on trial for treason. And some of the national media began picking it up. Well, Hitler understood that was his opportunity to make himself known and differentiate himself. And his trial was really a sensation, and in that he was able to make himself a sympathetic national figure. And so he came out of the trial when he went to Landsberg prison. He came out of the trial now a national figure with a lot of nationwide support. And so he was given special dispensation. So he was given access to all the books he wanted and the materials he could write. He had a steady stream of visitors for the first few months he was there, people coming to meet the would-be great man. It's very clear from at least 1928 on that Hitler has this great sense of urgency that Germany, from his perspective, Germany has this great foreign policy opportunity because World War One has resulted in a strange juxtaposition of forces. So if you think about it, 1924 or 1914, Germany faced powerful enemies, France, Russia, and Great Britain. And then eventually during World War One fought Italy, Japan, and the United States as well, basically all the other great powers, and from the German perspective came very close to winning. Now, in the late 20s, Italy had already turned to fascism, Japan had turned to militarism, Russia had fallen to the communists, and it was unclear what exactly they were doing in Russia. France had been seriously weakened by the war, so basically, and the United States had now become more or less isolationist. So that left basically only Britain, which had been weakened, and a very weakened France as the major opposition if Germany could just rebuild its power very quickly. And so Hitler understood in his own mind, he thought, if Germany could recover very quickly, then they could subdue the British and the French, and the only obstacle would maybe be the United States. But of course, the United States at that time was a major economic and financial power, but not a military power. So that's the opportunity, and so you get this incredible sense of urgency on Hitler's part. He always believes that time is against him.
How do you go about organizing and synthesizing such a massive amount of material to write a book like this one?
First thing I do is the same thing I tell my master's students to do. Don't think in terms of the whole. just what I do is make a kind of a detailed outline of how I envision kind of the key points. After looking over my material, there's certain key points I want to get across, and then I began looking at how I want to organize the various chapters to get across these key points, and then by and large, I try not to think of the whole. I try to think of just chipping away at little parts. Mm-hmm. So I tried to think of each chapter as kind of like a theme. So I have a chapter on essentially where Hitler got his ideas, I'm trying to focus on in organizational things, focus on making clear to the reader where his ideas came from, and then I can go on from there, and then I can once he's in power, I can begin to show how he begins to face the challenges he faces in the 1930s. And so it's kind of a step-by-step process. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here. And at each stage, I'm constantly, writing down ideas as they come to me. I'm one of those people, I don't wait until I finished a chapter or a manuscript to go back and rewrite it. If I'm in the middle of a chapter, And a thought occurs to me, or maybe a better way to do it, I'll just go back and rewrite it right then, the chapter, and get it the way I want it. So I might have, a dozen drafts of each chapter. Really? Because I'm just kind of constantly going back and revising to get it exactly the way I want it to be. Years ago, I began just composing on the computer here. So at home, I have a study and a big desk, and I put all my materials on the floor and on the desk and so forth, and so I kind of write, and I normally get in the habit of on the days I can, I write 5 or 6 hours a day, and then at the end I try to make detailed notes to myself of what I was thinking when I left off, where I'm going, what are the key points I want to emphasize. So I'm always trying to keep in mind what are the key points.
We've been talking with Dr. Stephen Fritz, professor of history at East Tennessee State University, about his most recent book, The First Soldier, Hitler as Military Leader. Vital Voices is heard every Saturday morning at 7 and Sunday afternoon at 2 here on WETS. I'm Fred Sausman.